Sliskus gestured dismissively. Say no more. No one important. A minor archon from Low Camorra. One with more titles than warriors, and a reputation as a trader in flesh to the cheaper arenas. No loss there. The camp was a smoking ruin. The raider swung out over it, turning slowly. The ice had been shattered at several points, and great gaping holes marked its surface. Bodies lay everywhere. He found his eyes drawn past the camp. He signaled to the helmsman to take the raider in.
Those corpses appear to have been arranged, Malice said at his elbow.
Indeed,
and quite a curious shape it is.
The bodies lay in a tangled line. It was obviously a symbol of some kind, a rune, as the natives of this world called them. But which rune? He waved his hand. The helmsman obliged, and the raider sank down until it was almost skimming the ice. It circled the arranged corpses with slow grace, its engines humming, and a cold mist rose, billowing about the skiff. Sliskus bent over the edge of the prow, studying the shape. He had amused himself with several lessons in the local dialect between hunts. His teachers rarely survived the lessons, but he had learned something despite himself. The rune shape tugged at his memory.
Hloya, he murmured. Which means...
Malice asked.
Laugh,
Sliskus said, and blinked. There was something under the ice. He saw it just for a moment, and had the impression of a forest canopy caught in a strong wind. He turned.
Up! Take us up!
The helmsman reacted with commendable alacrity. Even so, he was an instant too slow. Bodies tumbled as the ice ruptured upwards, driven by a heaving, monstrous shape. The kraken emerged with a thunderous shriek of hunger, its fang-studded beak snapping. Black tentacles slammed into the raider, and the crew were knocked from their feet. A slave fell screaming to the ice, and was immediately ensnared and dragged into the beast's maw. The raider pivoted on its axis, its engine straining, as a tendril coiled about the keel blade. Sliskus whistled. Slegg and his coilkin slithered to the rails, shard carbines in hand. They fired at the tendrils, severing those they could. Sliskus slid behind the disintegrator cannon, mounted at the prow, and swung it around, trying to get a bead on the kraken.
Ha!
He snarled, and activated the cannon. Ravening energies erupted from the barrel and punched into the beast's body, atomizing flesh and scale. The kraken shrieked and released the raider. It plunged back through the ice and vanished. Sliskus cursed and fired again, but he knew the beast was already gone. He stepped back and laughed. Arms spread, he threw back his head and bellowed his joy to the sky.
Oh, what a delightful jest! Did you see that, Aurelia?
Malice looked none the worse for wear. She took her seat as the raider rose into the air.
I saw. Hard to miss such a thing. Wasn't it wonderful? Quite exhilarating, don't you think? I could have done without it, frankly.
Malice began to fan herself.
You admire it.
Sliskus's head twitched, barely a nod.
Perhaps. It was very cunningly done. Even I must admit that.
He stared down at the hole in the ice.
A perfect trap. Add it to the other reports, and I see a pattern. A mind quite unlike that of any other wolf. Those others are brutes. Give them a bit of blood and they will chase shadows for days, none the wiser.
He leaned over the rail.
But not this one. No, this one hunts you,
Malice said softly. Sliskus laughed.
They all hunt me, though they know it not. They seek us here and there, though they cannot find us. That is part of the fun. But this one hunts you, specifically. This was a message, Trevelyan.
She frowned.
They are looking to cut the head off the serpent.
He looked at her, careful not to let anything show on his face.
So?
She sat back with a shrug.
So it is a challenge. Nothing more, nothing less.
Sliskus frowned. He glanced at Murta, who stood close by, as was his will.
And what do you think, my lady? She is right.
The beast challenges us, my lord. It makes sport of us, as if we are the prey here.
She spoke flatly, her dark eyes gleaming. Sliskus frowned, not at her impertinence, but at the words. They weren't hers, he suspected. He glanced at Malice, feeling suddenly hemmed in, though they were merely saying what he already thought. Still, best not to let them see that. It might set an unfortunate precedent.
A challenge. I have heard that before, have I not, Aurelia?
Sliska shook his head.
This isn't a duel. This beast is no worthy opponent, merely clever prey. I shall run it to ground eventually, when I discover where it lairs.
I can tell you, if you like.
Sliskus looked up. The harlequin shadow seer stood perched on the rail, balancing on one foot. Where she had come from, he couldn't say. It was as if she had appeared by some sorcerer's trick. She stretched her other leg out and planted a foot squarely on Slegg's uppermost shoulder. Then, with a single graceful motion, she was standing on top of his broad skull. The slith made to draw his weapons, but a gesture from Sliskus stopped him. The harlequin laughed and spun her staff in slow, almost hypnotic circles.
"Tell me what, acrobat?" Sliskus asked.
"The location of your foe."
"Oh, how useful!"
Sliskus threw up his hands.
"Were I of a more suspicious temperament, I might suspect collusion on the part of everyone here."
He pointed an accusing finger at the harlequin.
"How did you come to know that? Were you watching as it savaged my warriors, perchance?"
The harlequin giggled, stretched, and balancing on the tips of her toes, spun slowly, causing Slegg to grunt in discomfort.
"Convenience is the marrow of a story's bones, O great serpent. I saw. I heard, and that is how the tale goes."
Sliskus turned to Malice, his expression bleakly amused.
"Well, there you have it. That is how the story goes."
He twitched. The blade was in his hand so fast that Malice barely saw it before it left his fingers and shot towards the harlequin. The clown's giggles ceased in an instant as she interposed her staff. The knife sank deep into the staff with a hollow crack. The harlequin leapt back, off Slegg and onto the rail, wary now rather than amused. Sliskus laughed.
"What if I don't like your story, vulgarian? What then? What will you do?"
The harlequin carefully pried the knife free from her staff.
"You are a corsair, not a critic. Your opinion means little at this point in the narrative."
The harlequin casually tossed the knife back to Sliskus.
"The scene is set, the ending written."
"If that's the case, then why are you here?"
"To make sure everyone is at their appointed place."
The harlequin leaned on her staff.
"I know where it hides. Would you like to know?"
Sliskus's eyes narrowed. The harlequins gave nothing away for free.
"What will it cost me?"
he demanded, letting his hand drift towards the swords sheathed on his hip. The shadow seer looked at Malice. A moment later, so did Sliskus. Malice made a show of sipping from her drink.
"I would advise you to listen to the clown, Trevelyan. They rarely speak without purpose."
Sliskus frowned and looked back down at the ice. He could still see the vast shape of the kraken crouched watchfully in the depths, waiting for its prey to come within reach. He looked up.
"I will require the proper tools.
I happen to know that several of your guests brought their own pet killers."
Malice leaned forward.
"The more rash among them see this as an opportunity to expand their spheres of influence. So they have hired blades adept at striking in the cold and the dark. You know of what I speak?"
"Mandrakes," Sliskus said, catching her meaning. The shadow killers were famed in Cumorah for their lethality. There were those who said the mandrakes weren't even truly Eldar anymore, but something else.
"Who?" I will tell you, she held up a finger, if you allow me to help.
Why?
Simply the pleasure of your company, Trevelyath.
He frowned, suspicious. But he was no stranger to such whims, and he smiled, bent, and kissed her hand.
As I enjoy yours, my dear.
Chapter 18. Red Shadows. 641.M41. Lucas crouched beside Heather, listening to her snore. Only the pack were awake. The mortals sheltered in the cave they had found, sleeping around the fire, trying their best to keep warm. Heather and her warriors lay near the cave's entrance, ostensibly to hinder any attempt to creep up on them unawares. The rest of the cave was occupied by those they had freed from the ice camp. Not many, fewer than a dozen fit to walk, and a few others who likely wouldn't last the night. These had made their peace, and now they slept. Some, most, would not awaken. He glanced back into the cave, listening to the soft moans of the wounded, and smelling the blood. Some of them were not sleeping. Their minds were gone, and their eyes stared inwards at things he could not perceive. These two would die, and soon. Already malnourished, they refused food and drink, and were all but wasted away now. He felt some faint tremor of pity, but pushed it aside. They were already ghosts in all but body, and they were free of pain.
Morkai, keep you all, Lucas murmured.
What?
Halvar sat nearby, at the edge of the cave. He had his chainblade across his knees and was anointing its teeth with some scented unguent of his own concoction. Much of the bloodclaw's odour came not from lack of bathing, as Lucas had first thought, but from the melange of competing blessed oils and incenses he rubbed into his gear. Bear fat, mixed with the blood of orcs and other foes, was often used by the wolf priests to anoint the weaponry of the rout. Halvar made his own and blessed himself liberally.
I said, I'm having second thoughts, Lucas said. Perhaps they would be safer daring the wrath of the seas.
Better here with us than anywhere else. We are the shield and sword of the Allfather, his wrath made manifest. We are the wolf that guards the gate of hell.
Halvar spoke quietly, passionately. The Bloodclaw's faith was as strong as the Ett was tall. If he survived, he might find himself a place among the choosers of the valiant.
Aye, and a kind wolf we are. How often have we clashed with those who would use us to cruel ends?
Lucas looked at him.
We have even warred with our own in order to spare the innocent.
As it should be, as it must be, Halvar hesitated. You sound as if you disapprove.
Lucas laughed quietly.
No, I simply wonder why we do not extend the courtesy of our kindness to our own folk.
He stared out into the dark, listening to the muted fury of the storm.
We will go to war in the name of innocence elsewhere, but babes starve on this world every day. Our people die, and we judge them on the quality of their suffering. How many die a straw death that might otherwise have lived?
Halvar was silent. Then,
it was the will of Russ.
Yes. Remind me to ask him about it when I see him.
Lucas smiled thinly and looked down at Heather, feeling a twinge of something that might have been guilt.
We have much in common, Russ and I, both of us liars.
He stroked the sleeping woman's hair.
She is one of mine, I think. Several generations removed, but mine all the same. There is something in them, in their scent, in the way they hunt and sing and curse, that reminds me of my own folk. Do you remember yours, pup?
No, they are not my people anymore. They haven't been for many generations.
Halvar hesitated.
I barely even remember them.
their faces, who they were.
That is where we differ, then. I remember all too well.
Lucas stood, but continued to stare at Hitha.
Ake asked me why earlier. Why I brought them food. Why I offered them the choice. That is why. These are mine, and I will let no one take them from me. Not this world, not the Eldar, not even the Allfather himself.
Lucas stepped past Halvar, out into the cold dark of the night. The horizon was slashed by pale streaks of light, despite the clouds. It would be morning soon. They would reach the Jatvian steading then, and the mortals they had rescued might find some respite, however briefly. Not for long, though. Never for long on Fenris. His tribe was long gone. Their descendants had splintered, amalgamated, grown and shrunk in the centuries since he had been pulled off the ice. As they would do in the seasons to come, they adapted more easily than those they thought of as gods. But still, they were his. His blood, however thin, flowed in their veins. And so he would feed them. He would guard them, even unto the end of his days. He had been worthless as a mortal, a liar, a thief, and a philanderer. And while he wasn't much better now, he would do what he could. He would not forget. Others might, but not him. Sometimes he saw ghosts on the ice and in the morning mist, faces and voices from a past that grew more difficult to remember with every passing decade. He hawked and spat. His acidic saliva hissed on the ice, burning through it to the rock face beneath.
I will not forget, he muttered.
He straightened as something in the distance caught his eye. Idly, he scraped his talons together, alerting the others.
What is it?
Halvar rumbled, coming out of the cave. Silently, Lucas pointed. Flashes of light pierced the shroud of rain and snow. Not firelight, but something hungrier.
Wake up the mortals, he said quietly.
A few moments later, Hitha joined him.
The steading,
she said, her voice hollow. There was fear there, but mostly resignation. It had only been a matter of time before the Eldar located the steading.
Yes, we will see what can be seen and do what can be done. You will wake the others. Stay here, but be ready to move if necessary.
Hitha frowned. She gripped the hilt of her blade.
We will come with you.
No, Lucas growled. You would only slow us down. We will return for you. Until then, stay here. Stay quiet. Stay still.
Hitha made to protest, but Lucas was already turning away. He could only hope she would listen. He sprang from the ledge. Rock crumbled beneath his feet as he crashed down. Before it could collapse entirely, he was already leaping for the next outcropping, trusting in his own agility and his armor's auto-stabilizers to carry him safely from one to the next. He could hear Halvar and the others following him. There was no need for discussion. Distance was little impediment to their senses, and the storm winds only helped to carry the smell of fire and death to them. They raced across the taiga, moving as quickly as their enhanced physiologies would allow. All thought of stealth was forgotten in their haste. As they drew near the steading, smoke hung thick on the air, mingling with the snow. The crackle of flames filled Lucas's world. He heard nothing else. No screams, no howls, not even the hum of the Eldar anti-gravity engines. Only the fire.
Split up! He snarled, his voice cracking across the vox like a whip. Ake, Einar, Darg, take the left. Halvar, Kadir, with me. Drive them back, whatever it takes. Give the mortals a chance to flee or fight as they will. Go!
Lucas was moving towards the wreck of the main gateway even before he finished speaking. Halvar and Kadir bounded in his wake, thumbing the activation switches on their chain blades. The palisade and the main hall were in ruins. The lean, sharp shapes of raiders nosed through the clouds of smoke, like beasts on the hunt. Splinter cannons crackled. Dark, armored Xenos warriors raced through the destruction, laughing as they killed. Lucas activated his wolf claw as he burst through the smoke. The energy-sheathed talons tore easily through an unwary Eldar. The others whipped around, their weapons snapping. Lucas spun away, seeking safety in the smoke. Halvar looped past, his chainblade growling as it bit into the thin armor of his opponent. The Eldar wailed as the weapon chewed through its midsection, drawing the attention of the others. Kadir shot one, knocking the alien backwards, a smoking crater in its chest. As the others swung their weapons towards the Bloodclaws, Lucas stepped into the open, his plasma pistol in hand. He took aim and fired, neatly removing his target's head. He holstered the weapon, leaving it to recharge. He could hear the howls of the others as they met the enemy. There were more Eldar here than he had first thought. A trio of raiders hummed over the halls, firing down into the smoke. Venoms accompanied them, darting close to the rooftops. Lucas took a running leap and made it up onto the edge of a hall's roof. He reached the top just as a venom swooped past. His claw shot out, grazing the edge of the vehicle and sending it off course. It ploughed into the roof, setting the thatch alight as it crashed through into the hall below. A whisper of sound that might have been singing or laughter slithered over the vox. Banded by waves of interference, it was barely there, and it was soon lost in the harsh crunch of dissolving signals. Someone, something, was watching him. Lucas turned. From his vantage point, he could see most of the steading. What wasn't burning soon would be. But most of the dragon ships were gone from their river docks, save for one or two that burned where they were tied. A thin spark of hope flared within him. Some of them were alive. They had to be. A flash of color riding the storm winds caught his attention. He tensed, trying to make out the shapes within the kaleidoscopic swirls, but they defied even his enhanced vision. They were gone in a moment, making him wonder if he had even seen them at all. He heard the crunch of metal against wood, and turned back to see a raider approaching. It drew closer, its keel scraping across the nearby rooftops, its weapons silent. A lean figure stood balanced on the rail, clinging to a guide wire with one hand. The Eldar was taller than most and dressed flamboyantly. The coat it wore caught at the light, shimmering eerily. Two swords were sheathed on one hip, a pistol on the other. Its hair was longer than was entirely practical, whipping about its head in a frenzied halo. Its armor was not the dark mesh the others wore, but something more ornate. Even at a distance and through the haze of smoke, Lucas could tell it was intricately decorated. A smile spread across the Eldar's inhuman features as it caught sight of him. It gave a mocking salute.
Ahoy! The creature called in passable Fenrisian. I am pleased you accepted my invitation, Monki. That was a good trick you pulled with the Kraken.
It gestured around the steading.
What do you think of mine?
Lucas drew his plasma pistol and fired. The shot arced low, scorching the hull of the raider. The Xenos glanced down and then up, a frown on its face. Lucas shrugged. The Eldar laughed. A moment later, a disintegrator beam shivered across the roof, barely missing Lucas. It tore across the nearest edge, tearing it open. A second beam followed the first, cutting him off from the far side of the roof this time. Lucas found himself perched on a lone island amid the smoke and flame. The wood creaked beneath him, weakened by the twin waves of destruction. It began to sway.
Skitjak!
Lucas howled as the roof beam splintered and collapsed, dropping him into the burning hall below. Kadir saw Lucas drop down through the roof and the flames roar up where he had been. He slapped aside a Xenos warrior, driving it into a doorpost and snapping its neck. The rest of the creature seemed little inclined to get in his way as he smashed through the burning doors and into the hall. The wreckage of a venom occupied the center of the hall, and the flames spilling from its collapsed innards crawled across the floor and walls. Smoke wreathed everything, obscuring his auto-senses. Optical augurs in his visor whirred, seeking Lucas's life signs amid the fire. The fall alone wouldn't have killed him, nor would the flames, but if Lucas had been caught by the disintegrator beam, he might be injured enough that one or the other could well have proved fatal.
Lucas!
He bellowed, wrenching up a fallen support beam and casting it aside. It landed behind him with a hollow boom. There were bodies everywhere. This hall had been made into a slaughterhouse well before the fire had started. He heard a crunch of wood behind him and glanced back to see Halvar shoving tables and benches out of his path.
"He's in here somewhere! Help me find him!"
He heard the roar of weaponry outside and overhead. The hall shook, and he wondered if the Eldar intended to bring it down on top of them. A moment later, he heard a shout and saw Arke and the others crashing towards him.
"They cornered us! Drove us here!"
Arke snarled. There was blood on his armor. Darg was leaning on Einar for support. Kadir paused in his efforts.
"What? Why would they..."
Something caught his wrist, startling him. He looked down and saw a soot-stained gauntlet clutching his forearm. He reached down.
"Lucas!"
He hauled the trickster up, out of the debris he had been buried under. Lucas coughed.
"Trap!"
"What?"
"Trap,"
Lucas said, shoving him aside.
"We're not alone in here. Heard them moving around. We need to get out, into the open."
Kadir tensed, his senses straining. He heard nothing save the crackle of flames, saw nothing save death and shadows. And then the shadows moved. They came out of the darkness, moving like black lightning. No, not out of the dark. They were the dark, stretched and skewed into humanoid shapes. They were coal black, their inky skin marked with undulating sigils. Their features were indistinct, shifting and warping as they slipped from one shadow to the next.
"Come, then!"
Arke snarled.
"Come and face the sons of Rus!"
A gangly shape rose up out of the Bloodclaw's shadow as the challenge left his lips and drove a curved, scythe-like blade into his back. The weapon seemed to sink into the crevices of his battle plate, and blood jetted from his mouth in a shocked exhalation. The thing, the Eldar, coiled about him, striking again and again, hissing in pleasure. Arke staggered, groaning. Bolt pistols thundered, and the shadow thing was gone. Arke slumped, blood leaking from the joints of his armor. He looked around, dully for a moment, a snarl on his lips. Then he toppled forward onto the floor.
"Arke!"
Kadir snarled.
"Arke!"
He lunged for his fallen brother as something else lurched up from beneath him. He twisted aside at the last moment, falling heavily to the floor and scrambling back. Blood flowed from a long, grisly gash on his cheek. More shapes swarmed up around him, but were driven back by a desperate sweep of his blade.
"What are these things?"
"Demons!"
Halvar howled, whirling. He blocked a scythe blow and forced his opponent back.
"Unholy vibrations of the warp, spawn of lightless stars!" "No, they're shadow hunters,"
Lucas roared, slashing at one.
"Mandrakes, they call them."
It slipped away from his claw, as if it were no more substantial than mist.
"They're more shadow than flesh."
Kadir cursed as his own chainblade failed to bite flesh. He blocked a blow that would have opened his throat and sent the creature reeling. It sank out of sight, dropping into a shadow. He turned. He could see Lucas and the others battling their own opponents amid the fire dripping from the roof. The hall was entirely aflame now. Chunks of burning thatch pattered across his armor as he blocked a sudden slash. The Xenos retreated instantly, sinking away into the lee of a support beam. Flames washed across the floor, separating them. Behind him, Darg howled. Kadir spun and saw one of the creatures behind the other Bloodclaw, its hooked blade buried in the small of his back. It wrenched the weapon free, and Ceramite parted as if it were no thicker than paper. The Bloodclaw fell forward, his weapons clattering from his grip. Einar bellowed as his brother fell, and his flamer roared. The Shadow Warrior screamed as fire enveloped its angular form. Einar reached down, hooked one of Darg's arms, and began to drag him towards the doors.
"Help!"
he barked. Halvar leapt to aid him, firing his bolt pistol at the shadows, seeking to overwhelm them. There were mandrakes everywhere, slipping out of every shadow, their weapons shimmering with a dark radiance. The sound of their hissing laughter was loud as they closed in on the Bloodclaws, moving through the flames and smoke like wraiths. Kadir emptied his bolter, sweeping it around in a wide arc. He staggered, dropping the empty weapon as something slid between the plates of his armor and into the meat of his side. He snarled, spitting blood, and turned, drawing his chainblade. A burst of plasma sent his attacker toppling away before he could strike. Lucas was there, steadying him.
Time to go, brother.
He started towards the doors.
What about Ake?
Kadir demanded. Lucas didn't look at him.
Ake is dead, he snarled. If you don't want to join him, you'd best tuck tail and run.
They're running,
Sliskus said. He pounded a fist on the rail.
Look at them go!
The grey armored warriors had burst out of the burning hall in a flurry of shots, killing those corsairs who tried to intervene. He had hoped that by driving them all into one place, he had made things easier for the mandrakes. Instead, it seemed that the Shadow Killer's reputation was vastly inflated. The Space Wolves had left one of their number behind, but the rest were still breathing, including the one with the red hair. That one was special. He had known it as soon as he saw him. The others were brutes, but that one had a look in his eyes, a certain cunning to his features. He had reacted quickly, far quicker, in fact, than Sliskus had anticipated. He had hoped to draw the wolves out later, after the steading had been burned, a smoking ruin made for an ideal ambush site. He could have enjoyed their despair at the sight of the dead, even as they were cut down unawares. Instead, they had interrupted his warriors at their labor. He had been forced to react swiftly, sending the mandrakes in while their prey was on the alert. Even so, it had proved immensely entertaining. He turned to look at the others.
Astounding! I wasn't aware they had the wit to retreat. They are smart, these wolves, Malice said. Or perhaps your trap was simply sloppy, Trevelyan.
She sat at her accustomed place, watching the fray with detached amusement. Annoyance flared in him.
Our trap, Aurelia? Or have you forgotten that those are your mandrakes who failed to kill them?
Sliskus flung out a hand, indicating the shadow shape that slowly emerged onto the deck of the raider. He turned to face the spindly creature. He felt little of the instinctive fear that afflicted many in Cumorra when it came to the shadow-skinned natives of Elendrach.
Well, what have you to say for yourself, you ambulatory oil slick?
Whatever reply the shadow creature had been about to offer was cut short by a blast from Sliskus's splinter pistol. He had drawn and fired before the creature could speak. The mandrake slumped back and toppled from the deck with barely a sound. Sliskus holstered his weapon with a disdainful sniff. The shadow skins died as easily as anything else, whatever their reputation.
Call off the others. Let them go for the moment.
Malice cleared her throat.
Is that wise? We could easily catch them.
Sliskus looked at her.
And what would be the fun of that?
He looked back towards the burning hall.
They slipped our trap. It seems only fitting I give them a head start. Then we will pursue them. Will you send the mandrakes after them?
Malice asked.
Yes. Let them finish what they started.
Sliskus tapped his lips speculatively.
They will. Have no fear of that.
He turned to her, smiling.
Your confidence lightens my spirit, Aurelia. And since you are so sure in the success of the creepers, it seems only fitting that you should follow them and bring me my prize when they are finished with it.
He paused.
Or before, if possible. Am I to go alone? She asked.
She seemed somewhat discomfited. Good. Aurelia was infuriatingly sure of herself on occasion. At times, it was necessary to remind her that cunning as she was, he was more so.
No. What sort of host would I be if I didn't ensure your safety?
Sliskus motioned to Slegg.
You will accompany her. Take as many of your coil kin as you think best. I want the leader's pelt intact.
The Slith nodded slowly. Sliskus looked at Malice.
Take one of the venoms. Several would be better. I don't have several to spare, Aurelia. I expect you will figure out some way of accomplishing your task, even with such meager resources. He smiled at her. Be off with you, my dear. You know how impatient I get.
Chapter 19. Shadow Death. 641.M41.
Well, I'm not going to lie. That could have gone better, Lucas said, as he helped Kadir lay Darg down. There was no trace of humor in his voice. He looked around. The cave was small, as caves went. It was little more than a gouge in the mountainside. They had fled north, leading their hunters away from where they had left Heather and the others. Lucas hoped the Shield Maiden would be smart enough to take her people far from the area. Either way, there was little they could do to help the mortals now. Darg groaned. His blood spattered the stones, refusing to clot. His Laramon's organ had been damaged by the Eldar's blade, and the wound wasn't closing the way it should. Lucas could smell Morkai's breath on the air. The great black wolf was panting at the cave's threshold, waiting. He wouldn't have to do so for long.
We shouldn't have run, Kadir said, his voice hoarse. Not like that. Not like whipped curs.
He crouched on his haunches, flexing his hands, until the servos in his gauntlets whined in protest. He was taking Arke's death hard. Kadir had fancied himself the leader of his little pack, but Arke had been the fire in its heart.
And how would you have done it? Lucas growled.
Kadir didn't look at him. In that moment, the blood claws felt Arke's loss keenly. Kadir should have snapped at Lucas, snarled at him, but he didn't have the same fire Arke had. None of them did. Halvar pulled his helmet off with a convulsive motion. The dirge began with him, but pulled in the others, even Darg. A groaning, growling rumble of wordless sorrow. Lucas hunched himself against the sound, as if it were a chill wind. Part of him wanted to join them, but another part knew that he could not. For all that they had shared in these past weeks, he wasn't truly part of the pack, could never be a part of any pack. So he sat in silence, waiting until the echoes had faded.
If we had stayed, we would be dead,
Lucas said into the silence.
An honorable death,
Halvar said hoarsely. He stroked his totems, seeking reassurance.
A good death. Our deeds remembered in saga and song. And are our deeds etched in stone, then, or in snow?
Darg grunted as he tried to haul himself up.
Will they be forgotten now? Tell me that, then.
He laughed mirthlessly. His arms gave out, and he sank back with a disgruntled groan.
Oh, I can't feel my legs.
That's what happens when someone lays your spine open, Lucas said, almost gently. Stop complaining. You don't see Einar complaining, and he's got three blades sticking in him.
That Einar was still upright was more luck than anything else.
Hurts!
Einar said, levering a hooked blade out of his side. The unnatural blade had sunk into the shadowed crevices of his battle plate, seeking flesh with a preternatural precision. He cast it aside and reached for the next one. Lucas had to help him with the last one, high up on his back and resting against the exhaust port of his power pack. Einar grunted in pain as the blade popped free. Lucas hefted it.
It's only half real, he said, wonderingly.
Felt real, Einar growled.
Lucas tossed the weapon away and glanced towards Darg.
You're dying, brother, he said bluntly.
Darg closed his eyes. His breathing was labored.
I know,
he said, his voice thick with pain.
My own fault. I didn't see it.
No. Mine,
Lucas grimaced.
And you have no idea how much it pains me to say that.
He ran his hands through his hair.
They'll be coming for us. Hunting us, you mean?
Kadir said.
Yes,
Lucas said. He smiled thinly.
Can't say I like the feeling.
He peered towards the aperture to the cave, taking note of the way the shadows lengthened. His hackles rose. There was a scent on the wind, not a physical smell, not quite, but an iron tang that put him in mind of deep places and dark waters. They hadn't come as far as he might have liked.
They'll be on our heels. We need a plan. Fight,
Einar said. He clicked a fresh promethium canister into place with bloody fingers and gave his dragon a fond pat.
Kill!
Of all the Bloodclaws, he looked the least affected by what had happened, despite the injuries he had sustained. Of course, it was always hard to tell what Einar was thinking.
I like that plan, Kadir said.
Halvar nodded fiercely, his totems clattering. The Bloodclaws were eager for retribution now. Lucas could smell the kill urge rising from them, the need to wash away their failure in blood. He felt the same himself.
Lacks subtlety, he said. They can kill us with our own shadows, those ones. Rushing them, fangs bared, is a good way to get our throats cut.
He tapped the side of his head.
No, what's called for here is a cunning plan. So, it's hopeless then,
Darg said. His laughter turned to a racking cough. Lucas peered at him.
Hope is the mother of invention.
He reached down and unhooked a long cylindrical canister grenade from his combat harness.
Photon grenades. I borrowed a few from old Thymir. Handy things to have, just in case I need to run away with my tail between my legs.
He gave a lopsided grin.
Never thought of using them this way, though. What good are flash grenades going to be against those things?
Kadir asked.
Light,
Einar grunted.
Ah, yes, light, Lucas said. How better to fight shadow devils than with good, honest light?
Darg forced himself upright.
And how are we going to get them into the light? Ask nicely.
He coughed again.
Those things are quick enough to cut a frag grenade in half before it's activated. We'll have to surprise them.
I know.
Lucas looked down at him.
We need to draw them in, lay some poisoned meat. Wounded prey is always the hardest to resist.
Darg frowned and sank back down. He coughed, and blood speckled his chin.
What do you need me to do? You will be bait,
Lucas said.
You understand? They will likely kill you. Sure as sure, however the rest of this goes, you will probably die.
Darg nodded, his lean face sweat slick, his eyes fever bright.
You never answered my question earlier,
he said hoarsely.
Will we be remembered? By me, at least. And since I have no intention of dying any time soon, you'll have immortality, of a sort.
Lucas hesitated. Then, more reluctantly, he added,
There will be songs, Darg, I swear, for you and Arke. I'll sing them myself if I have to.
Good. Then give me the grenade.
They left Darg alone in the dark. Einar crouched out of sight and stared, unblinking, at his brother. Einar didn't question the world. He merely endured it. But this was almost too much, even if his brother had agreed to it. Darg lay on red snow, breathing shallowly, the flash grenade held tight to his chest. It was a simple enough trap. An open space, easy prey. Occasionally, Darg would make a half-hearted crawling movement, as if trying to haul himself deeper into the tunnels. A wounded beast left behind by his packmates. Einar tried to ignore the ache of his wounds as he concentrated on the dog. Everything hurt now. There was blood in his armor, and he could taste it in his mouth. But he would live. The Xenos blades hadn't struck anything vital. He wished Arke were with them. This was the sort of thing he would have enjoyed. Not Darg dying, but the fighting afterwards. Though, knowing Arke, he would probably have enjoyed Darg dying as well. He glanced at Kadir, crouched nearby. The other Bloodclaw seemed subdued. He and Arke had always scraped against each other like blade and whetstone. But now Arke was gone, and Kadir was off balance. Soon Darg would be gone as well. Halvar would say it was the will of the Allfather. Einar found no comfort in that. The pack had been strong. Now it was weak. He looked at Lucas, wondering what the trickster thought of it all. A proximity chime sounded in his ear, and he turned, scanning the darkness. The Xenos came in ones and twos, seeping from the darkness of the cave mouth. For a moment, Einar thought them nothing more than new shadows, added to the rest already filling the cave. But no shadow had ever moved with such purpose. They surrounded Darg, looking down at him as if curious. Then, almost casually, one of them crouched and buried the wicked sickle-like blade it carried in the Bloodclaw's leg. Darg grunted, but made no other sound. The creature pulled its blade loose and struck again, higher this time. Einar realized that it was searching for a place to cause pain. The others joined in, prodding and stabbing as Darg cursed and flailed at them. They flickered and twisted, easily avoiding his clumsy blows. Einar half rose, but Lucas caught him. He shook his head.
"Wait, brother," he murmured over the vox. "We need to make sure they're all in the cave."
Einar understood, though it sat heavily on his hearts. Darg's grunts became groans as the pain started to overwhelm him. Then, with a cry that was at once a scream of agony and a roar of fury, he set off the photon grenade. The light swelled, filling the cave, erasing every shadow save those grouped around the Bloodclaw. The photo lenses in Einar's visor compensated automatically. The mandrakes were abnormally thin, their dark flesh marked with scarified walls that might have been symbols. They had manes of ratty, colourless hair, and gaunt faces that reminded him of the fish the thralls caught in deep rivers below the Et. One of the mandrakes spat something that might have been a curse and plunged a blade into Darg's skull, silencing him. Einar shook Lucas off and lunged out of hiding. He charged towards the creatures and drove the stock of his flamer into the skull of the closest. He felt bone give beneath the force of the blow, and it toppled backwards, limbs twitching. He lowered the nozzle of his flamer and caught another with a burst of heat, reducing it to greasy motes before it could scream. Lucas and the others had followed him, exploding out of cover to fall on their startled prey.
"Roya!"
Lucas cried.
"Laugh, brothers! Laugh, so that they might know how much pleasure we take in their deaths!"
He caught a mandrake by the throat and slammed the dazed creature back against the cave wall. Before it could twist out of his grip, he rammed the talons of his wolf claw into its abdomen. It shrieked as cryonic energies surged through it, flash-freezing it inside out. He ripped his claw loose, shattering the creature. The glare of the photon grenade was already fading.
"Einar! More light!"
Lucas snarled. Einar obliged, filling the air with fire. The flames jetted out, blocking the exit to the cave. In the wash of wrathful light, Einar watched his brothers go to work. Startled mandrakes scrambled back and found themselves face to face with Kadir and Halvar. The Bloodclaws fought in grim silence, warding each other from the blades of their foes. Einar set alight any creature that tried to escape the killing ground by diving into the shadows of the cave or seeking relief in those cast by his flames. Einar turned a blow with the length of his flamer and kicked the attending mandrake in its midsection. The creature reeled. It slashed wildly at him, trying to keep him back. Seeing an opening, it lunged past him, seeking safety in the shadow stretching behind him. Einar pivoted, and a spurt of flame caught the creature between its shoulder blades, its head vanishing. With a wordless roar, he wrenched the struggling, screaming Xenos from his shadow and cast it full into the flames. The sounds of fighting had faded. The shadow things were dead or dying. Einar was relieved to see that his brothers had survived. Kadir seemed unhurt, but Halvar moved slowly, as if something inside him had been torn. Einar caught his arm.
Injured? Nothing I won't live through, brother.
Einar nodded and looked at Lucas.
What now? He growled. The hunt is not done, Lucas said.
He stared at Dag's body, and Einar wondered what he was thinking.
My belly is empty of meat, but my mind is full of tricks. Let us exchange one for the other.
What about Dag?
Kadir asked, looking at the body. Lucas grinned fiercely.
Oh, he's coming too.
Lady Malus's hunting party found the wolf easily enough. Too easily, as it turned out. Surrounded by the torn corpses of several mandrakes, the body lay where it had seemingly fallen, collapsed in the red snow. The beast had obviously been trying to make it up the slope into the dubious safety of the caves above. Malus was standing on the Venom's weapons platform, and she looked around warily as she leaned over the splinter cannon to inspect the corpse. Slegg and two of his coilkin hunched on the skimmer's sides, and a fourth crouched in the driver's cockpit. That the Ophidians could pilot such a temperamental vessel, even with the cold temperatures slowing their reactions, had been something of a surprise. They were adept hunters as well, tracking the wolves across ice and snow and up into the craggy hills. Slegg grunted something, and two of his coilkin slithered from the Venom and towards the body. Malice followed them down, frowning. Something about this seemed wrong.
Wait, she began.
Too late. As one of the slith rolled the body, there was a sharp, distinct ping, followed by an explosion. The slith closest to the blast absorbed most of it, at the cost of their lives. Malice was thrown backwards against the hull of the Venom. She sank down, her head spinning. Smoke billowed, mingling with the downpour and leaving greasy swathes in the air. Howls erupted from all around them, and grey shapes sprang out of the storm. A slith fell, its head tumbling soundlessly away from its collapsing body. Slegg began to fire wildly, trying to hit the fast-moving shapes. The slith, piloting the Venom, snarled something as it tried to gain altitude. The attempt was cut short by the roar of a bolt pistol. The windscreen cracked, and the slith jerked in its seat. The Venom dropped heavily to the ground, its undercarriage crunching against the rock. Malice went to scramble up onto the firing platform. If she could get to the splinter cannon, she might be able to fend their attackers off long enough to call for aid. But the click of a weapon being readied stopped her. She turned and found herself staring down the smoking barrel of a bolt pistol. She twitched aside at the last moment. The weapon roared, partially deafening her. She drew her blade and slashed wildly, driving her attacker back. He cursed and reached for his own blade as she darted forward, closing the distance. She had fought these brutes before. They were stronger and more resilient than they had any right to be, and she was no witch, indulging in bloody combat for the joy of it. Her attack startled him, and he fell back, eliciting coarse laughter from unseen companions. More shapes stepped out of the swirling snow, quickly cutting off every potential escape route. She turned with her blade held out as her attacker got to his feet and saw Slegg engaging a crimson-haired wolf. The wolf grinned at her as he shoved Slegg back.
"Leave that one, pups," he called out. "I need her alive."
The others, including the one she had knocked down, kept their distance from her. Their yellow gazes were flat and calculating, as if trying to decide which bit of her they wanted to eat first. She sniffed disdainfully and turned to watch the duel. Slegg moved with desperate speed, almost faster than Malice could follow. Four blades crashed down, scraping against a hastily interposed wolf claw. Fat sparks danced in the air. The wolf clawed his plasma pistol from its holster. A barbed blade tore the weapon from his hand as he raised it, and a second chopped into the armor, protecting his thigh. For a moment, Malice thought the slith might prevail, but only for a moment. Slegg's coils looped about his opponent as the slith redoubled its attacks. The wolf caught one of the Ophidian's wrists and dragged it off balance. Wedge-shaped jaws snapped at him, and he stomped on its tail, eliciting a shriek. He took the opening and slugged the Ophidian. It lurched away, slapping him backwards with an undulation of its tail. The wolf staggered, turned, leapt for his pistol. The slith plunged after him. The wolf caught up the weapon and rolled to his feet, turning to face the onrushing slith. He fired. The coruscating stream of plasma enveloped Slegg's skull. The Ophidian flopped to the ground, coils thrashing. The wolf spat on the twitching corpse as he stepped over it.
"Tough, but stupid,"
he growled in the coarse tongue of the Monkey. He looked at Malice.
"Can you understand me, witch?"
the red-haired brute asked in the gutter dialect of Low Camorra.
"I hope so, or this is going to be a short conversation."
"I understand, though it offends my ears," Malice said.
She cast a quick glance around. Through the falling snow and rain, she could see other great grey shapes moving soundlessly despite their bulk. Fewer of them had been killed than she would have hoped, though she could smell the pungent aroma of their altered blood on the wind. He laughed.
"As it offends my mouth to speak it. Are you the one in charge?"
Malice hesitated. Pride warred with pragmatism, briefly.
"No. I am but a guest to a party that is rapidly becoming intolerably dull."
She kept her blade extended. The combat drugs that had been coursing through her system were fading, leaving behind the ache of sore muscles and a pounding in her temples. The brute chuckled. She was at a disadvantage, and he knew it. She could smell the heat of him, a wash of animal and blood. A feral odor, as intriguing as it was distasteful.
"Well, you could help me liven things up, if you like."
His eyes flashed gold, and she froze. An atavistic thrill of fear shot through her. It had been so long since she had felt anything like it that she was momentarily overcome. She licked her lips.
"And what do I get out of it?"
"A quick death."
She smiled.
"What fun is that?"
He cocked his head, studying her.
"Life, then. A head start."
Malice's smile widened.
"Better. And what must I do to earn this mercy?"
He drew closer, despite her blade. He flashed a sharp grin as he brushed her sword aside and leaned close.
"Take me to your host."
Kjarl Grimblood stared into the flames, seeking any hint as to what was to come. As ever, there were more questions to be had than answers. The fire never lied, but neither did it tell the whole truth. At least, not in such a way that he could understand. It spoke in glimpses, just enough to set him on the proper trail, or so he hoped. There was no way to tell until the deed was done. He had been wrong more than once. It was rare, but it happened. The thought did not sit well with him. He had spent much time and effort honing his reputation for foresight, the way another warrior might hone a blade. A gift for prophecy was only as good as its interpretation. To fail too often was to see oneself slip from honored seer to object of mockery, and Grimblood had never had a taste for the latter. In the end, that was why the thought of being responsible for the trickster agitated him so. Lucas, of all the rout, seemed immune to fate. He defied portents and struck a crooked path that was impossible to predict. Grimblood had seen the trickster's death so often that he instinctively dismissed the possibility. Fate was a mocker when it came to the involvement of the jackal wolf. Around him, the Ett's central strategium chamber echoed with activity. The bark of Rivenmasters as they oversaw contingents of thralls, the clatter of equipment being readied. Through it all, Grimblood leaned forward on the bench, resolutely ignoring the slow drip of data that crawled along the tacticum feeds on the screens scattered all around the hall. The strategium chamber was full of hundreds of Kells and machine thralls, all of them bent diligently to their respective tasks. Some worked to coordinate the aerial search being conducted by those Stormfang pilots brave or foolish enough to volunteer to take their gunships out into the storm. Others added data to the growing battle map, noting engagements, casualty figures, and any other relevant tactical information. It was all grist for the mill, as far as Grimblood was concerned. He hungered for information, the way a wolf hungered for meat. He needed to know, and knowing was a compulsion. But so far, little of it was satisfying. He reached into the fire and stirred the embers. His ceramite gauntlet protected his flesh, and his battle-plate sensors barely registered a spike in temperature. He held his hand there for long moments, watching the paint as it began to bubble and peel. Then, with a grunt, he extracted his limb. He gestured loosely, sending spirals of smoke through the air.
"And what does the fire tell you, Grimblood?" "The fire tells me nothing. It merely reveals things I knew, but was not aware of."
Grimblood turned as the rune priest, Gale Runner, joined him before the hearth.
"Cast that baleful gaze of yours elsewhere, brother. What do the spirits say?" "Lies and truth in equal measure,"
Grimblood snorted.
"No more helpful than the fire, then. It is the season of confusion. The earth is cast into the sky, and the stars fall into the sea. Our foes could not have picked a better time. You have command?"
Grimblood nodded.
"Redmore argued, as ever, but he is more eager to go a-hunting. Command is a chain whose weight would chafe him, and he knows it. In any event, I have command of the Et this season, and that means my word is as that of the Great Wolf himself."
He frowned.
"Much good as it does me." "How goes the hunt?" "Badly."
Grimblood heaved himself to his feet. He began to pace, his broad frame filled with restless energy.
"Redmore and the others have made some kills, but the storm isolates us still. They must fight alone, and it is all but impossible to unite our efforts to any meaningful degree. The reports I get are incomplete. Some of that is the storm, but the rest is not."
Gale Runner sighed.
"Can you determine a pattern?" "The only pattern is that there is no pattern. They attack where they will, with no overall coordination. I suspect that we are not facing an army, but several small raiding forces, each attacking according to their own whims. And that makes them impossible to target, save in piecemeal fashion. Our warriors are chasing their tails, pursuing ghosts who strike and fade away before they arrive."
Gale Runner stared into the flames.
"Survivors?" "A few. They are sloppy, these Xenos. They snatch who they can, kill who they can't, and flee before we arrive, as if they know when we're coming." "Could they? Given the state of our communications, if they were intercepting our Vox signals, we wouldn't know."
Grimblood growled, and several nearby Kjells cast wary glances his way before hurriedly turning back to their tasks.
"I know," he said after a few moments. "That's why I gave the order for full Vox silence. Even so, we are at a disadvantage."
He clenched his hands uselessly.
"This is our territory, and we are being made to look like fools. The Hell Winter is passing. Soon we will be able to find them. And you think they won't flee back to whatever hell spawned them as soon as they realize that? No, they timed this too well. There is a mind out there coordinating all of this. It is not as random as it looks. Someone planned this, and if we could catch them, we could end it."
Grimblood growled again and turned back to the fire.
"But we have to find them first."
He bared his teeth at his unseen enemy.
Just let me get the merest whiff of them, and I will strike them down.
He slammed a fist into his palm.
Bones of Russ! Just give me that!
As if in answer to his plea, a squeal of feedback split the air of the chamber. Someone was trying to communicate with the Ett. Grimblood whirled, furious. Which of his fellow Jarls could be so foolish? A familiar voice cut through the static. Grimblood's recriminations died on his lips as he listened to a series of coordinates. Slowly, he smiled. When the voice became submerged in interference once more, he turned to Gale Runner.
Call the others back. Give them the coordinates. We have found our snake's hole.
What are you going to do?
Gale Runner asked. Grimblood growled in satisfaction.
I am going to muster my packs. I have tarried here too long. This kill is mine.
Chapter 20. Serpent's Nest. 641.M41. Malice ground her teeth in frustration. This party wasn't turning out at all as she had hoped.
Was this truly necessary? She asked.
She shifted slightly in her seat. The explosive he had attached to a spot between her shoulder blades was a solid, threatening weight. Some form of concussion grenade tied to her armor with rawhide thongs. The wolf hadn't warned her against trying to remove it, which she took as a sign that he was likely hoping for her to do so. Despite his talk of mercy, she had the distinct impression that he didn't care if she lived or died. The space wolf lay across the back of the venom, feigning unconsciousness.
Would you have trusted me were the situation reversed? He growled, not looking up at her.
He was very good at playing dead, despite the smile.
Now, be silent.
No, I wouldn't trust you. But rest assured, I shall not forget this insult.
Good. What's the point if you forget?
She laughed sourly.
That is a very Comorite way of looking at things.
Lucas snarled.
Quiet.
Marlis fell silent, but continued to smile. There was a twisted knot in the soul of this wolf. Most of them were steel true and blade straight, little more than living weapons. This one displayed the sort of cunning that would have made him a favorite in the arenas. The venom swooped low over the forest frost-covered canopy and drifted down over the hunting camp. The storm was passing. The world's orbit was stabilizing once more, and the planet with it. Raiders were being prepared for departure through the webway portals, their holds heavy with slaves and plunder. Venoms and jet bikes shot past them, intending to draw off the space wolves before they could descend on the camp, as they inevitably would. She urged the venom towards the hall Sliskus had taken for his own. The corsairs and Kabbalite warriors on guard paid her little heed. Her warriors were near to hand, readying her own vessels for departure. Hopefully, she would survive to join them. As she drew even with the ground, a shape suddenly leapt up onto the wing of the venom, making it shudder. Malice turned and saw Murta grinning at her.
I see the stories are true, my Lady Malice. You have returned victorious.
I have, Murta, Malice said stiffly. You seem in good humor.
I am. We are finally leaving this depressing mud ball.
Murta glanced at Lucas, and Malice tensed. Did the courtesan suspect?
This one's kin are mobilizing, according to the signals we have intercepted. Sliskus believes they have somehow discovered our location.
Impossible,
Malice said, but without conviction. She resisted the urge to look at the space wolf. It seemed obvious that the Monkey had some way of tracking each other. Now his insistence on being brought into the camp made a crude sort of sense. Sliskus was right. This one was cunning, in a way. Murta frowned.
If you wish to stay and see for yourself, feel free.
but it is time to go and take our plunder with us.
She looked at Malice.
You have failed. Sliskus won't be helping you with whatever scheme you had in mind.
And how do you know that?
They say Vect threw you over for other pleasures,
Murta said.
And now Sliskus has as well. You said you would tame him, but he does not seem tamed to me.
Malice glanced back at the seemingly unconscious space wolf. His lips quirked, and she knew he was listening to every word. She sniffed and said,
Regrettably, no. Trevelyan lacks any interest in helping me achieve my aims, as well you know.
And is that why you are bringing him such a gift?
Malice looked at the Lamaean warily. How much did she suspect? Murta's hand rested on the hilt of her blade.
Watch your tone, she said.
Murta's smile was wide and without mirth.
You should watch yours. Where is all your talk of helping one another now, eh? We prodded him to action, and for what? So he could have this beast's pelt for his bed.
Lucas chuckled and looked up at her.
He'll have a hard time getting it off me.
Murta cursed and went for her blade.
I wouldn't,
Lucas said, gesturing tersely. In his hand was the detonator to the device connected to Malice's back. Malice caught Murta's hand and pinned it.
Think carefully, girl, she hissed. If you strike, you will force me to dispatch you to prevent my own death. The detonator he clutches is linked to an explosive attached to my armor.
Murta glared at her.
I thought it was strange that he managed to kill Sleg, but not you.
Malice tightened her grip.
Think. Now is your chance, courtesan. Would you remain his slave forever?
And what awaits me with his death?
A more forgiving mistress, Malice said. I have use for a maker of poisons.
Lucas twisted his head slightly so he could see the Xenos.
I would listen to her, witch, he said. It seems to me, if I'm following your barbaric tongue properly, that we all want the same thing.
He grinned at the Eldar, ready for whatever happened next. He was fully prepared to push the activation rune on the detonator he held and blow the frag grenade hooked to the back of Malice's armor. It would be inconvenient, but he would adapt. He always did. The one called Murta stared down at him, her alien features twisted into an expression of disgust. Lucas smiled up at her. There was nothing human in her face, none of the honest beauty of someone like Heatha. It was too cold, too perfect, like a mask hiding something ugly beneath. Lucas twitched his thumb, caressing the detonator.
Best decide quick, witch. My finger is itchy.
She turned away. For a moment, he thought she was going to drop off the venom. Instead, she leaned back.
You should wipe that smirk from your face, monkey. Corpses do not usually smile.
Lucas chuckled and turned his attentions to his surroundings. The Eldar camp had been well hidden. The steading was sprawled in the shadow of the mountains, protected from the worst of the weather. The palisades had been torn down, as had most of the buildings within, and repurposed into tall towers and crude gantries for the skiffs and jet bikes. The place now resembled an industrial site more than a tribal dwelling. Great cages of barbed metal sat around a central fire pit, each one full of huddled, shivering shapes, the survivors of whatever tribe had made their home here. What was left of their warriors had been hung from artificial trees of black iron, their flesh exposed to the elements, and their captors' blades. Lucas restrained a snarl of rage at the sight. Vengeance would come, but not yet. Grimblood had been surprised to hear from him, of that he had no doubt. He and the other Jarls would be able to track his battleplate's beacon right to this camp. He intended to be waiting for them with the head of the enemy commander when they arrived. That would be the greatest jest of all.
Kadir and the others would be circling the camp, looking for weak points. When he made his move, they would join him, or such was the plan. It had worked so far. 4 wolves against an army. Lucas nearly choked on a laugh. Grimblood needed to hurry, or there would be none left to kill. The venom slowed as it reached the heart of the steading. Malice took it down, and it landed before the remains of what had been the central hall. Lucas studied it through slitted eyes. The structure resembled the one in the Jatvian settlement, though it was larger. It was built from stone rather than wood, and the roof was made of crudely sawn timbers rather than thatch. As the vehicle set down, the heavy door swung open, and Lucas's quarry strode out, flanked by 2 more of his slith bodyguards. The Ophidians raised charred carbines as the Venom's engine shut off, but Sliskus waved a hand, and they slithered back a few paces.
"You're alive, Aurelia! How wonderful!"
Sliskus spread his arms in welcome.
"Where is Slegg, by the way?"
"Dead,"
Malice said bluntly.
"Disappointing. Still, that is what he was paid for. What have you brought me?"
"See for yourself."
Murta shoved Lucas to the ground, none too gently. He bit back a snarl. Sliskus sank to his haunches.
"This is him, then. The smart one."
"It was," Malice said.
"I see no wounds."
"Poison," Malice said flatly. "I was forced to defend myself."
"How dreadful.
Still, you have my thanks."
Sliskus caught hold of Lucas's hair and dragged his head up.
"Ugly brute."
"You're not so pleasant looking yourself," Lucas said.
Sliskus froze. Lucas smiled. Then, with a sweep of his arm, he knocked Sliskus's legs out from under him. Before the Eldar could react, Lucas was on him, pinning him down. He twisted to look at Malice.
"Keep the others back, witch, or you will find your wits decidedly scattered."
Malice cursed, but the venom splinter cannon snarled. The slith were hurled back, bodies shredded. The vehicle began to rise, its engine humming. It spun in a slow circle, firing. Warriors dived for cover. Shouts and cries of alarm rose up. Lucas grinned. He looked down at Sliskus.
"You tried to kill me."
"I would have tried harder had I known how clever you were."
Sliskus smiled at him.
"You even speak a civilized tongue. How delightful. Do you know who I am?"
"No. Don't care, either."
"Shame. Familiarity adds a certain spice."
He twisted, impossibly quick, and Lucas rocked back. Sliskus freed a hand, and a blade flashed, nearly sliding between a gap in Lucas's battle plate. He rolled away from Sliskus as the other rose to his feet.
"Someone do me the favor of killing him, please," Sliskus snapped.
Lucas whipped his plasma pistol out and fired, knocking an Eldar back. He darted for the hovering venom, splinter fire chopping the ground around him. He caught hold of the keel just as Malice shot away from the hall.
"He's a quick one,"
he shouted.
"And you're a fool,"
Malice said, displaying the grenade he had attached to her armor, the sliced rawhide thong slipping to the ground.
"Kill him, courtesan!"
Murta, still perched on the wing, thrust a blade down at Lucas. He cursed and let go of the venom, tumbling across the ground in its wake. He pressed the detonator, but didn't wait to see if the explosion claimed them. A handful of Eldar raced towards him. Lucas rolled to his feet and darted for the cover of one of the wooden gantry towers. He pressed his back to a support pillar, waiting for the plasma pistol to reload. Splinter fire chewed the pillar to pieces around him as he counted down.
3, 2, 1. Ha!
He lifted the pistol as its coils blazed with renewed energy. He swung out from behind the pillar, enhanced vision allowing him to analyze the targets scattered across the killing ground with instinctive ease. Quicker than thought, he selected a target and fired. He turned, searching. Sliskus was gone. The creature would be looking to escape. A shot caromed off his shoulder plate, and he whirled, tackling a wide-eyed corsair through an empty slave pen. The Xenos folded up, nearly every bone in its elongated frame shattered by the impact. Lucas surged to his feet, swinging the body up to absorb the fire coming from the rest of the Eldar as they triangulated on his position. The plasma pistol pinged, and he hurled the body aside, firing again. Three down, four left that he could see. Good odds. Two came at him close, eager to meet him blade to blade, or just desperate. They moved fast, seeming to lash out from every angle at once. Their serrated combat blades drew sparks from his ceramite as he twisted and spun, trying to match them blow for blow. They darted away from his claw, narrowly avoiding it. He could feel an itch between his shoulders. The other two were trying to get a bead on him, letting their companions get him into position. Smart meat, but not smart enough. His claw flashed, catching a blade. He jerked the Eldar off its feet, hurling it behind him just as a splinter rifle spoke. Without waiting to see whether his aim had been true, he twisted aside, letting the other Eldar's knife hiss past his face. He lunged, burying his teeth in the soft armor that covered the Xenos's forearm. The plates cracked beneath his teeth, and he tossed his head, dragging the Eldar close. He shoved the barrel of the plasma pistol against his opponent's abdomen and pulled the trigger. The body collapsed, wreathed in smoke, and Lucas darted deeper into the forest of wooden supports. Alarm klaxons shrieked. He could hear the boom of bolt pistols and knew that Kadir and the others had made their move. If they could keep the Xenos confused, keep them reacting, they might be able to hold them long enough for Grimblood and the other Jarls to arrive. And if not, well...
Today's as good a day as any, Lucas murmured.
He heard running feet and stuck out an arm. A corsair slammed into him and pitched backwards. Whether dead or unconscious, Lucas didn't bother to check. He stamped down on the Eldar's head just to be sure, crumpling the ornate helm and the skull within. Splinter fire cascaded across his chest, causing him to flinch back. He snatched a grenade from his belt and sent it bouncing in the direction the shot had come from. The explosion caused the wooden towers to groan on their supports, and he heard the panicked cries of the skiff crews above. He looked up and grinned.
Perfect!
Jinkar hurried through the confusion. His racks surrounded him in a protective circle, grunting nervously among themselves. The camp was seemingly under attack, though no one seemed to know by whom or how. The more pugnacious cabals were brawling in the streets as the more paranoid waited impatiently for the webway gate to open. It wouldn't, not until Sliskus was ready to depart.
"And where is Sliskus?"
he demanded, glaring at one of the racks.
"Not where he ought to be, I can tell you that!"
It was all going wrong. Of course, from great suffering came great art. Generally, it was someone else's suffering, but Jinkar was adaptable. He hurried towards his workshop, hoping to catch up with Jacques before the Hex delegation collected their prizes and departed. The Monkees were on the way if they weren't already here. The whole camp was going to be smashed flat, sooner rather than later. It was time to go. An explosion rocked the area, and Jinkar stumbled. Smoke billowed across the path. He heard a dull boom and saw one of his racks pitch backwards. Then another was punched from its feet, its head a red ruin. More booms, more dead racks. The last of his servants turned, screaming briefly, before it too joined its fellows in a bloody heap. Jinkar huddled, his hands over his head, waiting for death. When it didn't come, he looked up. A space wolf was looking down at him, his helmet splashed with blood. The edge of a chainblade kissed the hollow of Jinkar's throat.
"You look like you're in charge," the creature rumbled in its primitive dialect. "Do you understand me?"
Yes,
Jinkar looked around. Two more of the hulking warriors stepped into view, stinking of blood and promethium.
"I know your tongue."
"Good. That means you can keep your head. At least for the moment. Where are the slaves kept?"
Jinkar saw what they wanted immediately.
If they freed the slaves, there would be no way to get them loaded up on the raiders.
True, some were already huddled in the holds of the raiders circling so impatiently above, but not all by any means.
You mean to free them? All of them?
He asked hesitantly.
You have a problem with that?
The axe bit into his neck just a bit. Jinkar swallowed. Thoughts of reaching for his blast pistol surfaced and sank. He wouldn't get a shot off, and he knew it.
No, no problem. Delighted to be of service.
A bone-rattling growl dripped from the front grill of his captor's helmet. It took Jinkar a moment to realize it was laughter.
I'm sure you are. Now, up, little thing, or we will leave you here with your fellows.
Jinkar dusted off his robes as he rose, trying to muster some dignity.
The slave cages are controlled by a central locking node. Trying to open them one at a time will be tedious. The central node will open them all at once. Every single one. Come.
He started towards his workshop. The space marines followed warily. One of them broke away from the group at a grunt from the one in charge. It vanished into the falling snow and smoke, moving like a ghost despite its bulk. The one with the blade and the one that smelled like a waste processing center stayed with him. The latter kept rubbing his primitive talismans and staring at Jinkar in an unnecessary and unnerving fashion. Explosions rocked the camp some moments later, the work of the space wolves, no doubt. Jinkar saw the warriors of three different cabals exchanging fire in the street ahead. A few shots from his captors sent them in search of cover. He felt the thrum of electrical signals in the air about him, and knew that his captors were speaking to one another on an encrypted communications channel. This was a coordinated raid, likely the precursor to an assault. Jinkar didn't care. A plan was beginning to take shape. Like all good plans, it required very little effort on his part. All he had to do was help these creatures until such time as he could slip away. Sliskus was as good as dead once the rest of the Mon-Ki arrived. Not even he could fight such odds. Jinkar smiled. He had fulfilled his part of the bargain with Jacques, if in a wholly unforeseen way. Of course, he still had to escape himself. His smile faded. His workshop proved to be still standing, against his fears to the contrary. The space wolves shoved him inside.
Where is this control node? The leader rumbled.
There,
Jinkar said, pointing. He looked around. The stasis tubes were gone, as he had feared. Jacques was likely already aboard one of the raiders circling the coordinates for the webway gate. He cursed inwardly, careful to let none of his dismay show on his face. But the suspensor cages were still there, their captives inside them.
Bones of Russ,
the totem-bedecked warrior grunted, staring at the beasts as they raged silently.
Are those what I think they are?
The other tapped Jinkar's shoulder with the flat of his chainblade.
The control node, turn it off.
Jinkar hesitated. Then, with a sigh, he moved to do as he was asked. He had hoped they would do it themselves and give him the opening he needed to flee. It seemed he was going to have to improvise. He went to the node and began to deactivate the power fields surrounding the slave pens throughout the camp.
Kadir, those creatures, are they...
They are,
the one with the axe said.
Why do you have them here, Xenos?
Jinkar's lip curled.
I was studying them. Quite fascinating, really.
They are not test subjects.
Oh, but they are, aren't they?
Jinkar paused and looked at the one called Kadir.
You all are. You are works of crude artistry. Your every cell designed just so by an artist of sublime cruelty. Finite works, to be sure, but the infinite can only be contemplated through consideration of the finite.
He looked at the wolf things sadly. It was a shame he wasn't going to be able to improve them in any way. They would have made wonderful additions to his body of work. He smiled at his captors.
I wonder, is that what the one who created you intended?
Be silent, creature,
the other space wolf growled. He looked around warily.
We are running low on time. Where is the trickster?
I have no doubt Lucas is where he needs to be, Halvar. It is up to us to give him the time he needs to do what must be done.
The space wolf looked at Jinkar.
Continue.
Jinkar nodded obligingly.
Of course, of course.
He continued, surreptitiously manipulating the controls of the suspensor cages, making them drift closer to his captors. His free hand inched towards his blast pistol as his head began to fill with images of the rewards to come. He was so close to freedom that he could taste it. He threw the last switch, and the node began to hum.
There! That's done it!
Throughout the camp, the power fields around the slave pens would be going down. All of the captives in the camp, not already trapped in the hold of a raider, human and animal alike, would suddenly find themselves free. And not just them. The suspensor cages went dark and dropped from the air. They crashed to the ground, and their prisoners leapt free with blood-curdling howls. Jinkar shoved himself away from the node, snatched his blast pistol free, and fired. The warrior, Kadir, jerked back.
As promised, monkey. All the captives are freed, but I doubt it is thanks that they have in mind, starved as they are.
He was halfway to the exit when he realized the lupine mutants weren't attacking the space wolves. Instead, they were pursuing him. He fired at one as it leapt for him. The creature fell, its skull a smoking ruin. But another crashed into him as he scrambled out through the door, knocking him sprawling. It snarled down at him, so close that he could see the perfect imperfection of its eyes, at once beast and human. The blast pistol was torn from his grip by a raking claw. He thrashed beneath its weight, something in him broken. Several somethings. Pain suppressants flooded his system as the first teeth entered his flesh. His last thought, just before the beast bit through his skull, was that they really were quite beautiful in their way.
Chapter 21. Wolf and Serpent. 641.M41.
Sliskus cursed as he stepped aboard his raider.
Blow the clamps and take us up. I am tired of the smell of this place.
The air throbbed with the sound of gunfire. Down below, the camp was in uproar. Someone had freed the slaves, and there were space wolves, more than just the one, running about, causing mayhem. Worse, the rest of the mangy beasts were on the way. The storm had abated enough that the Monkey had found their courage, and now grey gunships sped across the ice. They had been found thanks to Malice. He would be sure to show his appreciation later. His anger passed as quickly as it had come, and he laughed. This was exciting. Doubtless Malice had been coerced, another sign of the wolf's cunning. Mostly, his sort was only good for killing things. This one was smart. But he had risked much just to get close, to make the kill himself. Sliskus strode to the prow, humming softly. He had recognized something in the wolf's yellow gaze, a need equal to his own. He shivered in pleasure at the thought. It was so rare to find an enemy worth one's time. It was too bad he had to cut this trip short, just as it had become interesting, but there was no point in staying, only to face a fully prepared foe. The space wolves would fall upon his camp like the beasts they were, and it was best to be elsewhere when that occurred. The key to success was knowing when to depart. He leaned over the rail, watching as the lesser cabals fell to fighting each other. There were only a few raiders left, and with space at a premium, thanks to the plunder most carried, anyone not on board one was left to the wolves. They hadn't even had time to load the bulk of the chattel. He winced as one of the gantries exploded, taking a raider with it. He turned to the steersman.
Some speed would not go amiss. Take us higher, as quickly as possible.
The deck thrummed as the vessel rose into the snowy skies. There was barely a strong breeze now, and the sun was almost visible. The crew were in a heightened state of excitement. They had fended off several attempts to commandeer the vessel before Sliskus's arrival. Sliskus looked up towards the raiders circling before the flicker of radiance that would soon enlarge into a dimensional rip at his command. Beyond it, the Webway waited, and his flagship.
"Activate the gate!" he called out.
There was a sound like an immense cloth being torn asunder, and an ugly radiance bruised the sky. The air split, and the circling raiders plunged into the subdimensional aperture. He smiled indulgently. Malice would be aboard one of those, he was sure, and already scheming to spin the situation to her advantage. He wondered whether she would confront him immediately, or if she would seek a safe distance.
"What do you think, my lady? I...
oh, yes."
He turned, seeking Myrta, only she wasn't there. He wondered where she had got to. And Jinkar as well. Neither was at their appointed place. He sighed. It seemed this trip had been costlier than he had anticipated.
"Someone remind me to find a new courtesan," he called out, looking at the closest member of his crew. "Perhaps a new fleshweaver, too."
He dropped a hand to the hilt of one of his blades, feeling the warmth of the spirit stones.
"And no sign of the Harlequins," he murmured. "How odd."
Presumably, whatever scheme they had concocted had either succeeded or failed. He doubted he would ever find out which. That was the trouble with the clowns. They never let you in on the joke until it was too late to appreciate it. As the raider rose, he saw flashes of light streaking across the ice fields in the distance. He smiled and waved to the approaching space wolves. Midwinter had passed, and now the hunters left the wilderness to return to their entertainments.
"Ah, well, it was fun while it lasted."
His raider shuddered slightly as it passed through the aperture and then through the striated convolutions of the webway beyond. Seconds later, his raider was sliding into the labyrinthine assault bay of the incessant agony. Alarm klaxons were sounding. Raiders were docking at their berths all around him, and plunder was already being unloaded. It was a pleasing sort of madhouse. Cheers went up at the sight of him. He accepted their adulation with quiet restraint. A few dignified waves would serve as acknowledgement. Most of them ignored him, too busy seeing to preparations for imminent departure. They would leave the system as soon as he reached the command deck. The raider slid into an open berth, and Sliskus waited impatiently at the rail as a boarding plank extended from the dock. A slave was waiting on him.
"Report,"
he said, as the plank locked into place.
The system defense fleet is en route. Ribald Blade is running interference with the rest of the fleet, but they seem, very intent on getting back here."
Sliskus laughed. With the fading of the storm, the planet's isolation had been broken. Reports must be filtering back to the Space Marines about what was occurring. They had seen his stratagem for what it was, and ordered their fleet back to cut off his escape. But there wasn't a Monkey ship built that could outrun incessant agony.
"Let them come. I cannot think of a better way to end this celebration than by humiliating them in the void as I humiliated them on the ground."
"I wouldn't call it humiliation, exactly. Does a flea humiliate a wolf?"
Sliskus spun. A familiar face surrounded by a mane of red hair grinned at him over the barrel of the raider's disintegrator cannon, now aimed at the deck.
"My name is Lucas, by the way," the Space Wolf said, "if you were wondering."
"I wasn't," Sliskus said.
Warriors swarmed towards the gunner's dais. The barrel of the cannon rose, and Sliskus flung out his hands.
"Back! Back!"
If the cannon fired, it would punch a hole right through the deck and into the anti-gravity engines.
"Might I inquire how you came to be here?"
"I sneaked aboard," Lucas said.
He glanced around, taking in his surroundings.
"Nice ship. Lots of room. Too many Xenos, though. Might have to air it out a bit."
Intrigued despite himself, Sliska said, "Tell me, how did you know which was mine?"
"Oh, that was easy," Lucas said, leaning over the cannon. "I looked for the nicest one." His grin was wide and feral. "You didn't really think I was going to let you slither away that easily, eh?"
His thumbs twitched over the activation glyphs, and Sliska's tensed, ready to duck aside. Lucas licked his teeth as if in anticipation.
"Tell me, does your kind have the story of the boy who swallowed a kraken?"
"No, I can't say that we do."
"Pity. As you said, familiarity adds spice."
Lucas turned the cannon on its plinth until it was aimed at a raider docked in a nearby berth. He fired, and the skiff vanished in flames. Lucas spun the cannon, holding down the triggers. Particles of unstable matter burst over the docking ring, and delicate equipment exploded obligingly. The space wolf howled with laughter as he raked the cavernous interior of the bay, and much of what it contained, with destructive energies. The incessant agony shook as the wolf it had inadvertently swallowed tore at its guts. Sliskus stumbled into the rail, the docking platform shuddering wildly.
"Someone kill him!" he shrieked.
Corsairs raced towards the dais, only to meet their deaths as the space wolf swung the cannon around and targeted them. Beams of energy punched through the ether sail and swept across the rail. Sliskus was flung to the deck, narrowly avoiding the beam as it passed overhead. He scrambled back to his feet, gripping the smoldering rail for support. Alarms wailed. The bay was an inferno. Skiffs burned, as did the docking ring. Fires roared out of control, despite desperate slaves and crew fighting to contain them. If they weren't quick, the fires might well compromise the ship's ability to escape the system.
"Vent the bay!"
Sliska shouted, trying to be heard over the klaxons. He gestured sharply to the nearby crew stations.
"Do it now, before it causes a chain reaction!"
Long moments later, the bottom of the bay swung open with a torturous roar of metal and escaping atmosphere. The broken gantries and berths tore loose of the framework as the void reached out to claim what it could. Burning raiders, and those unlucky enough to still be on them, tumbled downwards, caught in the sudden decompression. Lucas swung the disintegrator cannon around and fired at the crew stations, preventing them from closing the bay. Sliskus cursed and scrambled towards him. He fired his pistol, but Lucas leapt over the prow rail and out of sight. Sliskus hit the rail and peered over. Lucas grinned up at him from where he clung to the curve of the prow. The plasma pistol in his hand spat, forcing Sliskus to duck back. He was over the rail a moment later, sword in hand. Lucas tackled him, and they rolled across the sweep of the prow. Sliskus struck him in the face with the pommel of a sword and sprang to a nearby gantry. He extended a blade in invitation.
"Come on then, wolf! You have come all this way. Don't be shy now. Duke Trevelyath Sliskus awaits you."
Lucas leapt from the wounded skiff to the gantry, landing heavily. Sliskus retreated as he rose to his feet.
"Is that what they call you then?"
Lucas twitched a finger in a come hither gesture.
"Come then, Duke. You and I must have words."
Sliskus smiled and stepped back.
"I can hear you from here, wolf."
Lucas shrugged and, quick as his namesake, bounded towards his foe.
"I think not,"
he said, with a laugh, bringing his claw down. Sliskus twitched aside, and the claw carved long gouges in the hull plate behind him. Lucas caught a handful of the corsair's hair and yanked him back. Their foreheads connected, and Sliskus staggered with a grunt. Lucas swiped at him again, driving him back a step. Sliskus bent away from the blow. He spun, blade slashing up and down. One of Lucas's braids fell to the deck, sliced neatly from his head.
"You are cunning, wolf. Slippery, more so than I expected."
Sliskus took a firmer grip on the hilt of his blade.
"But cunning has its limits."
"Even yours,"
Lucas growled. He flexed his claw. energy crawled along the talons, casting weird shadows across the cramped confines of the bay.
I have no limits, Sliska said. At least, none that I'm aware of. But by all means, come and see if you can teach me.
Lucas leapt. Sliskus ducked aside, a graceful shadow. The Streifson's claw slammed down, tearing through conduits and cables in an explosion of sparks. Lucas tore his talons free and spun, but too late. The Dark Eldar's blade danced across his ribs, slicing through Ceramite as easily as if it were paper. Sliskus laughed and sprang back as Lucas lashed out at him.
Close, Wolf, close! But my fangs are deadlier than yours by far.
Lucas growled low in his throat and glanced down at the wound. He could feel something burning within him. He laughed, even as he staggered.
Poison? Ah, the wolf has a palate.
Sliskus extended his blade.
But no, not poison. Psycho-vampiric circuitry. I look forward to seeing what it does to an augmented freak of nature like you.
I'll give you a closer look.
Lucas lurched as if falling, and then sprang, laughing. Unprepared, Sliskus ducked back, but not quickly enough. Lucas clipped him with the edge of his claw, and the corsair yelped in pain. Sliskus rolled away and came up swiftly, his blade singing out. Lucas ducked and drew his plasma pistol. Before he could fire, Sliskus's blade chopped through the barrel. Lucas tossed the useless weapon aside and fell back.
An amusing diversion, Wolf, but that is all you are. Just another animal for the arena, and there can be only one ending for your sort, long overdue though it may be.
Sliskus slid forward as Lucas scrambled away.
What is everyone's fascination with my death?
He asked, rolling aside as Sliskus's blade sliced through the gantry. He lashed out with his feet, hoping to smash his opponent's legs out from under him. Sliskus leapt upwards, avoiding the blow. He landed in a crouch, his sword slicing through Lucas's thigh. Lucas staggered against the rail, his vision blurring. Something burned at the back of his throat, and he was having trouble drawing breath. His enhanced biology was struggling against whatever the blade had done to him. Before he could push himself away from the rail, Sliskus was behind him. The sword pierced his backplate, tore through his flesh, and skidded off his hardened ribcage. It emerged from his chestplate and pierced the metal of the rail, pinning him there. Sliskus cursed and set his foot against Lucas's back, trying to lever the blade free. Lucas, choking on his own blood, raised his wolf claw and split the rail. It burst away from the gantry, and he toppled forward, dragging an unprepared Sliskus with him. They tumbled to the next gantry below, landing in a painful heap. The sword was jostled free of Lucas's abdomen. Still on his knees, his free hand clapped to the wound, Lucas swiped out with his claw, tearing Sliskus's cloak to ragged tatters. The ship shuddered. Sparks cascaded down, accompanied by loosened debris, momentarily separating them. Breathing heavily, Lucas hauled himself up. He could see more Eldar racing along the nearby gantries. Hurt as he wasn't going to be able to fight his way out.
Grimblood was right. That's disappointing.
Sliskus emerged from the smoke, a blade in either hand.
Your mistake was in thinking that you could ever beat me in my own ship. This is my hunting ground, and I am master here.
Wolves don't have masters,
Lucas said. His hand fell to his combat harness. He only had a few grenades left. Pulling them all loose, he activated them with a sweep of his thumb. He flung them out, and they rattled along the gantries before exploding. The gantry they were standing on creaked as the explosions weakened its support struts. Seeing Sliskus stagger as the gantry swayed, Lucas leapt. His claw closed on one of Sliskus's blades, and he snapped it off at the hilt. He tried to backhand the corsair, but Sliskus ducked away. The Eldar drew his pistol and fired. Lucas interposed his wolf claw at the last moment, and the blast washed across the gauntlet. He felt a prickling heat and smelled liquefying metal. Instinctively, he disengaged the clamps and seals that kept the claw in place, discarding it. What was left of it splashed to the gantry. Off balance, he turned back toward Sliskus, only to see the corsair readying another shot.
"Skitch!"
Lucas yelped, lunging forward. Sliskus didn't hesitate. His second shot struck Lucas in the chest. The trickster stumbled back, the gantry rail digging into his waist. Toxic fumes enveloped him as he swatted ineffectually at the bubbling mass eating its way through his chest plate. He snarled as the first flickers of pain reached him.
"Do you like it?" Sliskus held up the pistol. "Liquefier pistol discharges an incredibly potent acid derived from the caustic blood of some beast or other. It will eat right through that armor of yours, and the flesh beneath as well."
Lucas groaned and slumped. An acrid smoke billowed up from the concave ruin of his chest plate, and he could feel the acid eating away at his body. He sank down, his nerve endings screaming. The fingers of his gauntlets blackened as he tried to scrape the acid away. Moments later, it began to dry out and flake, leaving a gaping hole in its wake.
"It evaporates quickly, however. The pain alone is enough to kill most prey, but you are not most prey, are you? No, you are clever meat, and clever meat deserves a reward."
Sliskus stepped towards Lucas and tossed the pistol aside. He drew a cruelly barbed knife from his belt. He sank down beside Lucas and wrenched the sections of his weakened armor apart, exposing his chest.
"I'll carve out that cunning heart and keep it by my bedside," Sliskus hissed, raising the blade.
Lucas struggled to rise, but the Eldar's grip was strong. The knife sank into his chest, cutting through carapace and reinforced bone with ease. Lucas caught at Sliskus's forearm, fighting against the pain that threatened to overwhelm him. But it was no use. With a dreadful wet sound, his secondary heart came free of his chest. Lucas gasped in agony and sagged back, choking on his own blood. Sliskus held the heart up, admiring it.
"Smaller than I imagined," he murmured.
Darkness crept in at the edges of Lucas's consciousness. Even a space wolf had limits, and Lucas had reached his. Grimblood had been right, damn him. But he couldn't leave without one last laugh. The guttural sound slipped from his blistered lips, gaining strength even as his body lost it.
"What are you laughing about?"
Sliskus demanded, glancing away from his gory trophy. He leaned close, grabbing a handful of Lucas's scalp.
"Answer me!"
Lucas grinned, saliva bubbling in his mouth.
"You aren't the only one who can play with acid," he said thickly.
He hawked and spat. Sliskus reeled, screaming shrilly. The corsair staggered back, his hands clasped to his smoking features. The world spinning about him, Lucas caught the edge of the gantry and dragged himself over the edge. The stars beckoned, and he joined the tide of wreckage still being vented from the ship. He fell slowly, striking the edge of the lower bay and spinning out into the welcoming black, Sliskus's screams echoing in his ears. The incessant agony shuddered as it left Fenris's orbit, alarm klaxons sounding. Sliskus slumped back against the broken rail, cradling his burnt face. He needed to get to the command deck, to take charge. But for the moment, he could do nothing but sit and wait for the pain to recede. Slaves surrounded him in helpless panic, and he thrust them away, conscious of his warriors' gazes.
"Get away! Get away!"
He dragged himself to his feet, blinking back stinging tears. There was no telling what the wolf's spittle had done to his face, but he had survived worse. It could be repaired. Or maybe he wouldn't. He might well decide to keep the scars as a reminder to go with his trophy. Through blurring vision, he examined his prize. The wolf's heart, he murmured, remembering the Harlequin's prophecy. He smiled, but it twisted into a wince as pain flared through his ravaged features. Nearly undone by a metaphor. What a ridiculous way to die.
Silly serpent. Death is for secondary characters.
Sliskus looked up through blurring vision. The Shadow Seer crouched on a shattered strut nearby, watching him. Given the situation, he wasn't surprised to see her. He attempted a crooked smile, and new wounds opened on his ravaged face.
And am I a main character, then, in whatever little drama you have concocted?
You served your purpose well, Duke. Done as the part demanded, and with such style.
The Harlequin leaned towards him, her movements unnaturally smooth, even for an Eldar. She reached out as if to touch his injured face. He flinched back.
I do everything with style, he growled, and I need no instruction from you.
He pulled himself to his feet. Below, through the open bay, he could see Fenris turning, a blue, hateful blotch on the stars. The Harlequin watched him, head tilted. He held out the heart.
Do you want this?
The Harlequin rose to her full height.
We merely wanted the absence of it. Do with it as you see fit.
Sliskus smiled.
I'll hold on to it, then. A keepsake, to remember this little affair by.
He watched the world below dwindle as the incessant agony departed for the safety of deep space. He could already feel the faintest edge of boredom sliding against his nerves. He would have to find new entertainments with which to occupy himself once he had healed. Perhaps Aurelia was right. Perhaps it was time to return to Camorra and remind himself why he had left in the first place. And wouldn't Vect be surprised to see him? And Aurelia, too, if she had managed to get off Fenris. There was much fun to be had, if you knew where to look.
I don't suppose you'll ever tell me what this was all about, will you?
He said, finally. There was no answer. When he looked around, the Harlequin was gone. He snorted. Typical. He looked down at the heart.
Lucas, he murmured. I will remember that.
Epilogue. Trickster's Heart. 641.M41.
You did what?
Grimblood roared. His bellow echoed throughout the Ett's apothecarium. Trays rattled against stone as thralls scattered. Lucas winced and stuck a finger in his ear.
Not so loud, Jarl. I'm still feeling delicate.
He had been in the apothecarium for days, since the system fleet found him floating in the upper atmosphere like a piece of space junk. That he had survived at all was a miracle. His chest felt as if it had been cored out and scraped raw. An expanse of newly made scar tissue covered his bare chest. He touched it gingerly. The flesh around it was puffy and tender.
Quiet!
Grimblood snarled. He pointed at Thymir, who stood at the foot of the examination slab.
I asked you a question, brother.
He made a very convincing argument,
Thymir said, somewhat sheepishly. The Iron Priest's cybernetic eye whirred as he looked back and forth between them, and the trio of medical servitors standing nearby copied the gesture. The thin automatons hunched within multi-limbed Medicaid harnesses, their withered organic hands bound tight to their sunken chests. A variety of sensory apparatuses hid their features from view. The harness's twitching limbs were still stained with Lucas's blood from their excavation of his wounded chest to make the necessary modifications.
I did do that, yes,
Lucas said. Grimblood ignored him, still glowering at Thymir.
You put a stasis bomb in his chest.
He did, Lucas said, nodding. Thymir had set the bomb into the wound left by Sliskus's blade, wiring its detonator to Lucas's biorhythms. Not without some growling at first, of course, but he had seen the humor in it eventually.
"I don't even know if it works," Thymir protested.
"He doesn't,"
Lucas added helpfully. Grimblood glared at him.
"Stop talking, trickster! Stop talking now, before I rip out your other heart!"
"I wouldn't," Thymir said. "The bomb might go off."
"It might,"
Lucas said. Grimblood turned his glare on the Iron Priest.
"You said it doesn't work."
"I said that I don't know if it works."
Thymir shook his head.
"That isn't the same thing."
He frowned and looked at Lucas.
"It's a humming,"
Lucas said, poking the scar tissue that was the only remaining sign of the invasive surgery that had been carried out only a few hours before. He grinned.
"It is supposed to hum, isn't it?"
"No,"
Thymir said, stepping back. Grimblood hesitated a moment, then followed suit. Lucas poked the scar again, and Thymir took another step back.
"Stop poking it!
It itches!"
Grimblood snarled in fury.
"It itches because you stuck an explosive device into an open wound, you mangy, deceitful fool!"
"Well, something had to go in there,"
Lucas said.
"I was off balance."
Grimblood snorted.
"Serves you right. You stole my kill, trickster."
He grinned savagely.
"Or try to, at least."
Still grinning, he pointed upwards.
"What happened up there?"
Lucas's smile faded.
"I was overconfident. I forgot that a serpent's bite can be poisonous."
He looked away.
"It won't happen again."
"Did you kill it, at least?"
Lucas shook his head.
"No,"
he smiled.
"But he'll remember me. What happened at the camp?"
Stuck in the apothecarium, he hadn't heard much beyond the howls of triumph echoing through the Ett. Grimblood grunted.
"Yeah, you missed quite a slaughter. The ones who didn't manage to get to the Webway portal now sleep on red snow. Not so many as we might have hoped, though. Too many escaped, and too many of our folk died unavenged."
Lucas hunched forward, wondering if the pain he felt was entirely physical. He clenched his fists. Heather and her people would be gone if they had survived. But he had found them once. He would find them again, though perhaps not for several generations. He forced himself to relax.
"What of the pups?
Have they not visited you, ungrateful whelps?"
Grimblood smiled.
"Such is the way of youth."
He shook his head.
"You taught them well. They are alive. Some new scars, but they bear them with honor. They will be elevated to the gray soon. For their bravery."
He peered at Lucas.
"And yours. What you did took courage."
"And cunning. Don't forget cunning."
Lucas chuckled.
"Seems the fire was wrong."
"No. It didn't say when you would die, only that you would."
There was no humor in Grimblood's smile. Even so, Lucas laughed, after a moment of bewildered astonishment.
"Oh, that is funny. You tricked me."
Grimblood looked down at him.
"It would have been a good death,"
he said, finally.
"I deserve better,"
Lucas said. He probed the inflamed flesh around his wound, wincing. The pain was worth it. He could feel the stasis bomb humming within him. Or perhaps it was growling, like a contented wolf.
And with Thymia's help, I have made certain that when I die, I will be remembered as I am.
Grimblood glanced at Thymia.
I knew it was a mistake to let you keep that thing.
It's a coward's weapon anyway, Thymia said. Who better than him to have it?
Grimblood sighed.
Perhaps,
he looked at Lucas.
Perhaps that is the most fitting end for the Jackal Wolf saga, whatever my hopes. A monument to hubris and courage in one.
Lucas grinned.
See, Thymia, I told you he would get the joke in his own time.
He slapped Grimblood on the arm.
Cheer up, Jarl! Hyola! Laugh!
And Lucas laughed. That was Lucas the Trickster by Josh Reynolds, read by John Banks. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2018.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.